Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Athlete and Love Show, where Jesus shines with love. I am so excited and delighted that each and every one of you have decided to tune in on this afternoon because we have a very special guest. But first, let us read Psalm 136, numbers 1 through 9. Oh, give thanks to the Lord, for he is good, for his mercy endures forever. Oh, give thanks to the God of gods, for his mercy endures forever. Oh, give thanks to the Lord of lords, for his mercy endures forever. To him who alone does great wonders, for his mercy endures forever. To him who by wisdom made the heavens, for his mercy endures forever. To him who laid out the earth above the waters, for his mercy endures forever. To him who made great lights, for his mercy endures forever. The sun to rule by day, for his mercy endures forever. The moon and stars to rule by night, for his mercy endures forever. I've read to you Psalm 136, numbers 1 through 9. May the Lord add a blessing to the hearers, the doers, and the seekers of his holy word. Let us pray. Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you for this day. We thank you for blessing us that we were able to wake up this morning and you started us on our way. We thank you for giving us a reasonable portion of our health and strength. We ask for something to be said or done that would edify, magnify your name. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Amen. And I'm so excited because on today we have a very special guest. Our guest is Dr. Ruby Payne. Dr. Payne has spoken internationally for many years. She has many books out. She speaks on poverty. She's been to Waco. I've heard her many conferences. So we have the opportunity to speak with her. And so I'm going to give her a call. Just a second. Give me just a second. My phone's missing up here. Let's see here. Oh, it wants me to do it online. Let me see. I'm going to actually not call my guest online. Give me just a second. Okay. I'm going to try this. Let's see here. All right. Let's see if I can do this here. Now, this is new here. This is a new system. Because I usually call from my phone. Let's
see. Hello. Please enter your 6-digit conference code.
Just a second. I think I'm going to have to put it on hold and try to call again because I don't see the conference call. Give me just a second. Okay, while we do this, while I get the conference code, as I said before, we have Dr. Payne, who's an international speaker and who is great with working with educators and teachers and things of that nature. So give me just a second. I'm going to have to pause the show because I'm going to have to make some calls here. Let's see here. Because it's not a lot. Let's see. Give me just a moment. Just a moment. We have to make sure this is working. And I don't think it is. Okay, this is live radio, so just bear with me. We're going to have it. Let's see if I can make a phone call. Okay, let me see here. Let me try something else. We're going to try to make this call. Just be patient here. Let's see. Because
this code did not show up. So therefore, I'm having to see if I can figure out the code to call. Let's see here. Okay. Let's see if it'll open up in here. Sent me my code. So this is a new system, and so because it's a new system, then there's a lot of codes. Let's see here. Verify. Continue. Let me see if I can pull this up because the code is not showing up. Let me see. Lord, I hope this code shows up. Oh, I see it. Yay. I'm just now seeing it. Okay, so I'm going to have to try to call from this my other phone. Okay. Let's see if I can do this here.
Hello. Please enter your 6-digit conference code. Your 6-digit conference code.
Okay, yeah, that's a problem because it's only 5 digits that they sent. Okay, so this is what we're going to have to do. I'm going to have to make a couple of phone calls because the code is not on here. I only see 5 numbers and it's asking me for 6.
Hello, please enter your 6-digit conference code.
Okay. So, let's see here. We're going to have to come up with something else here. All right. Let me try to make another phone call. Just a second. Okay. All right, so here we go. I just sent it to me.
Hello. Please enter your 6-digit conference code. Welcome to free conference calling. The conference has not started. If you are the host, please enter your 4-digit host code to open the conference. If you are not the host, please press the star key to connect to the conference and wait. We will now connect you to your call. Your host has yet to join. Thank you for waiting.
Okay, so we have a little music at least.
Thank you.
Hello? 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 All right, something's going on with this phone. I believe that they're trying to call me, and someone just, let's see. All right, we're going to have to figure this out. Give me just a second.
Call rejected.
Okay, I'm trying to figure out. All right, let's try this again.
Hello, this is Lynn Jackson.
Hello, Lynn Jackson. This is Afrita Love. I'm trying to reach Dr. Payne.
Yep. Hold on just one She'll be on in just one moment.
Okay.
Thanks for holding.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Okay, she's dialing in.
Okay, great.
Hello?
Hello? Dr. Payne?
This is Alfreda?
Yes,
yes, ma'am.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
Great. All right.
Are you recording this call?
Yes.
Okay. Do you want to call me directly on my cell phone? It might be a better recording.
Okay. Okay.
Are you okay with this one?
Yeah, this is fine.
I mean, I'm okay either way. Okay. Okay.
Are you want me to call? Do you want me to call you? I can call you. I'll call you. Let me. I'm gonna put it on hold here. Oh, yes, ma'am, it's clear.
Okay, cool. We'll just use it for
that. All right, so we're on a recording. It's a radio show, a Blog Talk radio show. And do you mind if I ask you some questions?
Well, go right ahead. I got your list from Lynn, but...
Okay, great.
Yeah, whatever. You can be off that list if you wish.
Okay. So, Dr. Payne, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I've been educator for many years. I started out as a high school teacher. And you know what? There's an echo on the call. Can you hear the echo?
I can't hear the echo. It's probably because I called you on my cell phone, and I have the other phone that's from the radio because I couldn't, like, I couldn't intertwine the two together.
Okay, I'll tell you what. Why don't you call me on, do you have a radio number? Because this echo is going to drive me crazy.
Yes, I do. I was going to ask you that. Okay, great. So it is, okay. The number is 323.
6423
1743. Yes, ma'am. All right, I'll call you back. All right, thanks. Bye. Bye-bye. All right, so we're going to wait for Dr. Fain to call us back. There are a lot of new features on this particular radio site. They've updated it. So, therefore, the technology is new. Some of it is. So we're going to wait till she calls us. All right.
Better. Oh.
Dr. Pay?
Yes, ma'am.
Dr. Pay?
Can
okay.
you hear me?
All right.
Can you
hear
me?
Yes, ma'am.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So, Dr. Payne, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yes. I've been an educator for many years. I started out as a high school teacher for 9 years. And then I was in central office. I was an elementary principal. And then I wrote the book, Framework for Understanding Poverty, and started traveling and consulting then as a result of that. And now it's gone out into communities, and people are using it in communities, and we call it bridges when they use it in a community. So I consider myself an educator, and I've been that way for many years.
That's great. And I want you to know that I've heard your presentations and also read some of your books, and you are phenomenal.
Oh, thank you. Do you have a copy of the new one, Emotional Poverty? I'll send it to you if you don't.
Oh, I don't have that one yet.
I will send it. So when we're finished, you can give me an address.
Okay, I appreciate it. Okay, so Dr. Payne, how did you begin the work that has become the AHA process? How did the work spread into the community in different sectors?
Well, it's, as always, a personal story. I think things happen. And one is that I grew up Mennonite, which is a religion somewhat like Amish, okay, not as strict. But one of the things they required you do is I went to a Mennonite college, and they required that you live in a third world country for 3.5 months. So I lived in Haiti down in the Caribbean to study poverty. And then when I came back to the United States, I met and married a man named Frank Payne, who came out of extreme poverty. He was Native American Indian and Caucasian. And understanding his neighborhood and why they did what they did led me to write that book, A Frame of Understanding Poverty. Well, my mom and dad live in Ohio. They're passed away now, but they love to give that book away, but they never read it, okay? And there was a gentleman in the community named Phil Duvall, and he used to call my mother. He called her the preacher's wife, you know, because he ran a drug treatment center, and if he needed a baby bed or whatever, he would call her. And he called her one day for something, and she said, "Hey, my daughter wrote a book. Do you want a copy of it?" Well, you know, if he wants the book, you know, he got to say yes. If he wants the bed, you know. So he said yes, and he read the book, and he called me, and he said, "Ruby, that's why our drug treatment programs are not working very well in poverty." He said, "You should write a book for communities." And I said, "Well, you know, actually, I'm not a social worker. I will be glad to co-author it with you, but I don't know the language of social work." So we wrote the book, Bridges. And then the way Getting Ahead got started, which is a program we do for adults in poverty, is that when the welfare to work law passed, Mount Vernon, Ohio, was having a lot of difficulty getting all of their welfare recipients to work. And so Getting Ahead became a tool then that we developed to help with that process. So since then, it's grown into law enforcement. It's grown. 70% of law enforcement is actually with people in poverty. There are actually two issues in law enforcement right now. One is race and one is poverty. And the right. second thing is that they it bled over then to hospitals, and then it got into social service agencies and churches. So it has kind of taken on a life of its own.
Wow, okay, that's great. Okay. Now, you indicated that one of the main rules in poverty is that one has to share. What does that mean for students of today?
Well, whenever I've traveled all over the world, and it really doesn't matter where you live in the world. There's two issues here that everyone has to deal with. One is time, because one of the ways we're like around the world, everybody's only got 24 hours a day. And what you do with your time and how you spend that time determines not only what you know, but a lot of times who you know. And environments have demands on them. So whenever you are in poverty, which is a survival environment, then your resources are not predictable. They're limited. And so people become your possession in many ways. And one of the things you do just to stay alive is you share your resources with other people, because they're going to share their resources with you when you have a problem. And so what happens, this concept of being standing on your own two feet and being individualistic tends to be more of a pattern of stability. In other words, my resources are stable, so I don't need your resources, so I can make independent decisions. And one of the things, for example, just Wall Street Journal about 3 years ago had an article in it. They couldn't understand why all the big box stores, Target, Walmart, et cetera, at midnight of the night when people got their food stamp deposits to their cards, they were jammed with people. And they had to hire extra cashiers and extra stockers. And they couldn't understand why. Well, I do, one, you're hungry. And number two, if you don't spend everything on that card that night, somebody's going to call you in the morning and say, hey, I know you got your card. Can I borrow it? And you have to say yes. And the reason you have to say yes is when you need help, they'll be there to help you. And so it's that understanding of sharing. And it is then an issue where the whole concept of money in middle class, you don't share your money. It becomes a conflict of understandings then about how the world works.
Wow, that is amazing. Okay. Now, you wrote a book entitled Emotional Poverty in All Demographics. So what would you suggest is one of the ways to reduce anger, anxiety, and violence in the classroom?
Well, there's a lot of ways. And one of the things we talk about is actually what causes it. And when people explode, they actually have it's actually a physical thing. Their brain is actually unregulated and unintegrated. And so I explain how that works. And then one of the things we talk about are all the ways you can calm people down that don't cost any money or very little money. Like, a lot of people don't know this, but if somebody gets really angry and you hand them a bottle of water, 10 to 12 ounces of water, and don't talk to them for a while, water, and they drink the water, water actually metabolizes cortisol. And cortisol is where you get the fear response. And so what happens is people will calm down just because of the water. Also, the autonomic nervous system gets dehydrated, and just the electrolytes in the system don't work correctly either. So one of the things that you want is water. It's just simply a function. Your body functions better. In fact, a couple of weeks ago, a principal in East Texas told me that he had all this water donated to them after the hurricane last year.
Mm-hmm.
And so much water, he just started giving out to everybody because he had a huge room full of it, right? He said, Ruby, our test scores went up significantly just because kids had water all the time. Yeah. And so one of the things is, and he said, and our discipline referrals dropped. And part of what happens is water, everything that happens in your body is an electrical and chemical interaction, and water really helps with that, you know. Like another one that a lot of people don't know about that calms people down significantly is when you just, your eyes look up at the ceiling, okay? Because when your eyes are on the ceiling, when your eyes are up across the top of your head, your brain cannot access the emotional part of the brain. It just can't. It can only access the visual part of the brain. And so one of the things we tell teachers is just make kids look at the ceiling. Put stuff on your ceiling, okay? And have them point up there with the finger and look up, and they calm down. It is not possible to access feelings. So there's a lot of quick strategies like that that you can use to help kids calm down.
Well, yep, that is great, especially with the water.
Yeah. Like another thing we talk about in that book is the fact that male and female brains, now, there's all this noise out there about, but male and female brains are actually different, okay? They process things differently, particularly emotion. And one of the things that happens in a male brain, you have this situation where in a female brain, if they have something upset them emotionally, in the MRI brain scan, that's basically throughout their brain, they know that within 2 minutes. And the first thing a female brain tends to do. Now, when I say brain, I'm not talking about genitalia. I'm not talking about bodies. I'm talking about brains. Okay? And what a female brain will do is cry and talk. When a male brain has an emotional head, there's less blood flow between the two hemispheres in a male brain. Okay, and your right hemisphere deals more with emotion, and your left hemisphere deals with language. Okay. And so it's harder for a male brain to find the words to express the feelings. And the research is that it takes on the average a male brain about 3 to 5 hours before they can actually talk about what happened. And they like, when they have an emotional upset, they like to have quiet, they like to be left alone. And if you don't know that, see, one of the things in the school business is we'll call them in, 76% of educators are female. About 50% of the population is male, but the majority of discipline referrals are male. And one of the reasons is that we want them to talk right away, and if they don't, we punish them again, and not very non-productive behaviors. You know what I mean? And if you know something, if you know about that, you can have much, much more effective interventions.
Right, and when you were speaking about that with the water, eyes up, and the brain, I was thinking, this will increase instruction time for teachers, you know?
Yes.
This is good.
Yes, yeah. And that's part of what's happening right now. Schools are having difficulty getting to instruction because they're dealing with so many emotional outbursts, and they're trying to use the discipline strategies on emotional issues, and it's not working.
That's right. I like that. I wrote that down too. Yeah, you're right. Okay.
Oh yeah. And
do you believe
so many things like this, huh?
Oh, go ahead. No, go ahead and finish.
I'm sorry.
No,
I was just going to say there's so many tools like that to help you understand what's happening. See, the limbic system of the brain, which is your amygdala and hippocampus in part. Okay. It processes info 200 to 5,000 times faster than the cortex of your brain, which is where your thoughts are. So your limbic system is always going to react first. And one of the ways that you can read a kid's, and your limbic system tells where you are emotionally. And one of the fastest ways to know where a kid is emotionally in part is to watch their feet. And there's a lot of things like this that educators just don't know.
Right. Okay. It's good. Now, do you believe privilege is an enemy to those who experience some forms of poverty?
Yes. I absolutely think that, first of all, obviously, as in the literature and the news, there's racial privilege. There's also privilege by class, okay? There's also privilege by where you live in the United States. Like if you are in a rural, poor area, you just have, if you don't have transportation, you are really isolated and cut off. You are, there's privilege in terms of ownership. Like one of the issues in on the Native American Indian reservations is that if you live on the reservation, you're actually not allowed to own your property. The reservation owns it. And one of the ways that people off of reservations build asset bases is by property ownership, mortgages. Okay. So when you start looking at right now in the news, we hear a lot about racial privilege and economic privilege, but mm-hmm. and they are real, and gender privilege. And I think that if you are in financial poverty and then you are male, you have one stroke, you've got two strokes against you in schools. If you're minority male, you have three strokes against you. If you're a male who can't speak English and you're minority and poor, you got four strokes. Do you know what I mean? So for me, privilege is, yes, it's very real, and it's there, and it just exacerbates poverty. And then, research. Yeah, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I want to hear what you have to say.
I was going to say, you know the ACE research, right? Adverse Childhood
yes.
Experiences research? Yeah.
I've heard of it, yes, ma'am.
It's 10 questions, and you can Google it online. And if the more questions you answer yes to, you get 1 point for each question you answer yes to. One of them is, did you grow up in poverty? One, did you have a family member in prison? One is, did you parents have a divorce? One is, were you ever sexually abused or treated inappropriately? Another one is, did you witness violence? You know, I mean, you start adding up those numbers. And what we know is that there's a high correlation. The higher your number, the higher the correlation to mental illness. So I see those as environmental privileges or lack of privilege, if you will. And so I think one of the issues is that, yes, it's real. So I'm sorry, I didn't know what you were going to say next.
I was going to ask, because what you said kind of sparked a thought here. When you talk about, you know, those particular privileges and how those strikes come against the students, what impact do you think that have on their learning?
Well, what the research indicates, and this is in the Emotional Poverty book, is that whenever your environment teaches you that you're separate from or less than, which is what racism does particularly, okay, then it impacts the development of the self. It impacts your inner self. And the research is that it motivates behaviors that are less than beneficial to you and to others. And right now I'm working on a sequel to Emotional Poverty. One of the most interesting things is how that kind of information gets recorded in the brain. And it doesn't get recorded at the conscious level until you are past the age of, I don't know, 5 or 6. When you start having language and you can assign words to it, then you record it at the conscious level. But prior to that, see, your emotional self is structured by the time you're 3. Okay, now it gets restructured in adolescence. But only 10% of what goes on in your brain is at the conscious level. The other 90% is at the subconscious level. So, for example, if you're a minority and your skin color is different, that's one thing you can't change. And so the bottom line then is you get all these nonverbal messages that you don't have language for, and it gets recorded in that subconscious part of the brain. And the message is you're less than, you're separate from. And so undoing that message that you don't even know you got is a huge factor in how you negotiate your environment. The research is that your external behaviors are a reflection of your internal messages. And if you got internal messages before you even knew what they were and you structured them, it becomes really, really difficult. And then when you are conscious and you have the language for it, you're in an environment that reinforces it again, it's very problematic.
Wow, that's great. Okay.
See, all learning is double-coded. All learning is coded cognitively and coded emotionally. And if you figure that 90% of your brain is you don't have access to because it's subconscious or unconscious, you think about all the coding that's in there. You don't even know you have.
Right. And let me ask you about this, and I'm going to go to the next question. Now, when we talk about special education and we talk about privilege, does this all go into that aspect that you're speaking about? Those
yes.
students who learn differently?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And what we, if you, first of all, if you look who's in special ed, okay, 70% are from poverty, 60 to 70% are minority, okay,
mm-hmm.
and 60 to 70% are male,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes higher, okay. Now you got to look at that and you got to say, that's a problem, because they're not 70% of the population.
Right. That's true. Okay.
And there's another piece here. Do you know about epigenetics?
Epigenetics?
Have
no.
you heard epigenetics? Okay.
I've heard it
it's
before.
It's the
yet.
Science. EPI. It's EPI genetics. It's the science of how trauma gets embedded at the cellular level. What they're finding right now is that all memory in your brain, your memory is actually in all your cells. For a long time, people thought the memory was strictly in the brain, but what they know is your body operates almost holographically, and so each cell has recorded in many ways information, memory from all the cells. The cells are specialized, but they have common recorded memories. Does that make sense?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. And so when there's trauma in the family, generational, ancestral patterns, or in the present, it gets embedded not just at the brain level, but it gets embedded at the cellular memory level. For example, in the World Trade Tower in 9/11, there were 200 babies in that, 200 women in the immediate vicinity who were pregnant. And so after the babies were born, they tested all the babies. And if the baby was in the first or second if the mother was in the first or second trimester of pregnancy, there was no difference in the babies that were born. If it was the third trimester of pregnancy, every one of those babies had elevated levels of cortisol, which cortisol increases anxiety. And so one of the things we know is that there are environmental stresses and traumas that can get embedded at the cellular level.
Okay. Wow. All right.
So you talk about privilege. It's very, very deep at very, very many levels. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, ma'am.
yeah.
Yeah, that's true. That's good to know, because then that way, you know, when training or instructing individuals with behaviors, applied behaviors, then we can always link the privilege or the cognitive and emotional with strategies to help those students become successful.
Right. And one of the things in this subsequent book I'm working on is in the first emotional poverty book, we not only look at the students, but we look at the emotional realities that adults bring into the classroom and where the adult is in stages of adult development. Adults go through development stages just like kids do. And each one of those stages comes with emotional issues that you have to deal with, okay? Like, for example, in your 40s, one of the emotional issues you have to deal with that's in the research is you have to deal with how you're going to handle aging, okay? And one of the things is how you begin to, how you're addressing your own emotional issues is a huge factor in how much quote unquote emotional noise there is in the classroom. Well, in this sequel book I'm writing, Emotional Poverty 2, one of the things we know is that when adults are stressed, when the adults are stressed in the situation, okay, they actually have that ability to pass the stress on to the kids, all right? And one of the ways is that we can, there are ways to measure and know your stress level on your Apple Watch in the bottom line or your Fitbit. And the thing is, there are things you can do to reverse it. But one of the things I'm very concerned about in the educational business right now is that last year we were 400,000 teachers short in the United States. And the teachers are just too stressed. And so the bottom line is they're bringing that stress to the kids as well. And so part of the issue is we have to have not only strategies for the children, the students, we've got to start talking about strategies for the adults, just to handle their own emotional well-being, because it is bleeding over into the kids.
Wow, you are so brilliant, because you know what? When you were speaking, I was thinking about that. So with this, with your book, you're going to do a research, like qualitative research or quantitative, so that you can see the impact?
What I've been doing is it's all in the research already, okay? But what it is, all this research is out there already, but it's in the medical field, the psychological field, and the clinical field. It's
You're not right. In
education. And so the bottom line is, first of all, I love to read, okay? That's my favorite hobby, okay? And I read all the time. So I have probably read on this topic, I don't know, 400 or 500 books, okay? And I'm constantly reading everywhere I can find out, because I think there have to be better answers out there than what we've got, okay? And it's all out there in the research. So all I did for Emotional Poverty Book 1 about demographics, I just took the research that already exists and said to educators, here's what the research says, and here's how you use it in your classroom, and here's what you do. It's just the application of the research in the classroom. And, you know, the thing of it is very few educators have the time to read like I do. You know what I mean? And so the bottom line is I think it's a gift I can give to make lives better. I'm worried. I'm very worried for our teachers right now.
Right.
And if you're emotionally upset, it's pretty hard to stabilize it for kids.
That's right. So let me just ask you this, and I'm going to move to the next question. So what is one strategy that you've learned from reading that helps teachers in the classroom keep their composure? I know one thing I like to do is yoga. I do that a lot.
Right. Well, one of the things is if you can – one of the things is you, part of what you need, there's another thing I'm putting in the book. See, there's something in the research called mirror neurons.
Mm-hmm.
They're actually neurons that allow us to mirror other people. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
And pick up from other people.
Right.
So you know how you're with somebody who's really stressed? You can pick up their stress.
Right.
Have you been in a? You've been in a room with somebody who's really been angry, right?
Right. Correct.
You can feel it, right? And that
right.
bleeds
yes,
over
ma'am.
To you, and you can pick it up, right? Well, one of the things that happens in the classroom is kids come in stressed, you know, and teachers can pick up that stress unless they consciously understand how they can address that in their head, not to do that. Do you know what I mean? That how
right.
they can kind of keep their composure. And I think that's one of the things that really skilled, experienced teachers do. But they can't explain to somebody else how they do it.
Right. That's good.
And so,
I can't wait to read that book.
It's just fascinating. I'm learning so much about myself. It's amazing. And I want to put in a I'm going to ask you to do something when we're done with this. There's a woman I'd like you to interview because we're trying to get a group of people together who are fed up with federal policy and education, and we want better policy for kids because we think right now educational systems are damaging kids more as much as they're helping them.
Yes, ma'am.
Just let me give you one example. And here's an example that hurts boys, boys from poverty, minority boys, et cetera, is that most male eyes, female retinas are wired differently than male retinas, okay? Female retinas take in about 20% more light than male retinas do, and on the average, and female retinas are hardwired to see detail and color. Male retinas are hardwired to see movement. And one of the things we know from the research is that many males, their eyes don't start tracking left to right, which is what you have to be able to do to read, until they're 8 or 9, what puts them in second and third grade. So we have a lot of policies out there that are not all that beneficial. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, ma'am. I know exactly what you mean. Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. So if they can't read by the end of first grade, they get a failure message. They get a you're less than, you know, you're no good because you couldn't do this, da-da-da-da-da-da. And people aren't looking at, okay, let's look at what developmentally is appropriate. And rather than shame this kid for this, why don't we think about physically, developmentally, where the child is?
And then, Dr. Payne, when they get in 5th, 6th, 7th grade, they're like 3 or 4 grades behind, and so the teacher's backpedaling, paying catch-up. They're playing catch-up.
Exactly, exactly. But by that time, the child has also got a message internally that they're not capable.
Right. And then that's when the discipline comes in.
Yes,
you
know exactly.
What I mean? The behaviors. Okay.
Yeah.
That's good.
So, yeah, but I'll tell you, this woman's from Ohio, and she's really working hard to, you said you were a Christian radio station, right?
Yes,
did you say that, or did I misunderstand? Yes?
Christian education, yes, ma'am.
Yes. Well, she's very much, she feels that she's been called by God to do this, and I think she has. And she's a professor in early childhood development, and she means to make a difference. And I want to help her.
Okay. And what I'm going to do after our interview, I have your number, and I'm going to give you mine, and then we can set up a group text or something like that, okay?
Right. I'll send you her info. I travel a lot, so it'll be hard for me to be involved in all the conversations, but I would love to have you get her on your show.
Okay,
I'm convinced that the way we're going to change this federal policy, I think, and I could be wrong about this, I think we're going to have to work through churches.
Right.
Because
you're right.
The driver for it right now is financial. And while I'm not opposed to that, I am opposed to damaging children.
Right. Totally agree. Okay. Now, so as I review your hidden rules, you said that those in poverty focus on people, those from the middle class focus on achievement, and those in wealth focus on connections. Can you provide us with a little insight about that?
Well, it becomes a driving force. And let me just say it this way. What people do around the world is they take this 24 hours a day, this time problem they got, and they put it on an axis with their resources, and then they manipulate them so they can keep stability, because the brain likes stability, because stability means you have predictability, okay, and the brain likes to operate that way because it's more efficient for the brain, you know, and so what happens is, as people are creating stability in middle class, the way they create stability is they take their 24 hours a day and they focus on achievement or work. That's what they do with their time. They go to work. And then they also spend time on going to school at night so they can get a better job, okay? And then they spend time on increasing their asset base, like a mortgage. Okay. And typically in middle class, they have four hidden rules about money. Kind of one, I don't ask you for money and you don't ask me. Number two, if you borrow, you got to pay it back. Number three, you never ever quit a job till you have another one. And number four, you don't tell anybody your salary. Okay. But when you get to wealth, you have a different problem. And your problem in wealth is that you have too many things to take care of by yourself. You can't. If you have your own business, you simply cannot take care of everything. So, like, for example, my cousin who's passed away now, but he had a chemical company in Indiana, and he had an employee who spilled about 20 gallons of chemical into the ground. Well, the employee told him right away, but his company was close to a river. Well, by the time he got that spill cleaned up, it cost him $6.5 million. So you're vulnerable. So in wealth, you use your financial, your social, and your political connections to keep you safe. And it helps you make more money. So that leads to another hidden rule. When you go to a party among the very wealthy, you don't introduce yourself because they'll walk off. You are introduced. And when you're introduced, they say your connection. Someone's such a family, such a foundation, such a company, because you're indicating your safety. And the rule about money is you just don't talk about the cost of an item. See, what happens in wealth is that your connections become one of your most valuable assets because they link you to the people who can, one, keep you safe at a national level or an international level. B, they can keep your financial status safe, and they can keep your stability that way. People in wealth understand that as you get wealthy, that top 1%, the quickness with which you can become unstable is fast. You get a bad financial advisor, you can be finished in 3 or 4 years, okay? You get in a country that's unstable, and you're done. Like, one of the things that these very wealthy families all have is they have passports for more than one country, and they have residence in more than one country, so that if they need to leave, they can. For example, as 15 years ago, when Venezuela started to collapse, the wealthy people in Venezuela started using their connections to get to America, and Houston has lots of them. It's just the way they were able to make it out. So connections are huge. They're the currency that you trade on. You want to invest in this company. You know somebody who's on their board of directors. It becomes your currency. But in wealth, you don't have resources, or the resources you have are unstable. So you can't plan them as well. So one of the things that happens, it means you plan less because you have less to plan with. And then you people become the most stable, predictable thing you have in your environment to a large extent, because money's not predictable or stable. The environment's unpredictable, so you try to have relationships that will help you. But one of the – he wrote the book, I'll think of his name in a minute, but he wrote a book, he's out of Harvard, he wrote a book 3 or 4 years ago, and Evicted was the name of his book. And in that book, he says, he called them disposable ties. What he said, at the very, very bottom of poverty, you have what are disposable ties, people who have a relationship for a period of a time. It's a transactional relationship. I'll live with you for 2 months. I'll help you pay rent, that kind of thing. And so what we find is that the fewer the resources, the more you depend on people. And as those resources get thin, the more transactional the relationships are. Entertainment takes away the pain, and money is shared. What you don't share are your people.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's good. And you know, I'm sorry.
No, please go ahead.
Okay. When you came to Waco, you indicated that there was a student from a college who a group of church ladies got together and bought her a car. And you were given that example, and I think that's a great example that you provided, because it really illustrates to educators in the community what the priority is for those who are in poverty or middle class or, you know, other classes such as that.
Right. And one of the things that middle class does not, there's reverse snobbery in middle class about wealth, because middle class doesn't understand some of the rules you follow in wealth that you have to follow, okay? One of them is perfection. The clean understanding is, hey, you have the time and the money to make this sucker perfect. It better be perfect, okay?
right.
But in poverty, you use entertainment as a way to take away the pain. And even when things are just brutally ugly, a lot of times people will make jokes about it or stories about it. It's just simply a way to deal with the pain. And I've had people in middle class say, that is so unconscionable to make a joke about that. And I said, hey, can we revisit this? How would you deal with that if you had few resources? So what it is how you're dealing with the pain, okay? And so I think there's what you have in communities is you have all three groups, and they're pretty isolated from each other, and they don't know each other, and then they make room for each other. And it is, and there's misunderstandings all along the way from each group to the other group.
So
when I work
with
law enforcement, which I do, let me just say one thing about law enforcement. One thing about law enforcement is, as you know, there's a disproportional amount of domestic violence in poverty. I mean, there's domestic violence across the board, but there's a disproportional amount. And one of the reasons is there's a couple things here that people just don't understand. They think, number one, they don't understand that in poverty, that person is yours. They're your possession, okay? It's kind of how middle class feels about their car. Do you know what I mean? It's mine, and you're not going to drive it, and you're not going to touch it, you know? And the second thing about it is that you don't, in poverty, you don't have, in generational poverty, you do not have a language to resolve a conflict. One time in Frank's neighborhood. Frank died in 2010, but one time in Frank's neighborhood, I watched a husband and wife one time. They argued for 15 minutes about who the cat loved the most, and it almost came to blows. And what they were arguing about is who's most lovable, but they couldn't argue at that level, so they argued at a personal level. And if the research is, if you want to resolve a conflict, you have to go away from the personal to the issue. Well, you don't have access to the issue words, so you argue at the personal, and then it becomes physical. And there's so many other variables that are simply not understood.
No, that's good insight. Okay. So what are some projects that you have that's going on now? What are you working on? What are some speaking engagements that you have going on?
Well, I'm working on that emotional poverty book, too. And I'm very excited about that. And I'm doing a lot of work with emotional poverty right now, yeah.
Okay. All right. So how can individuals contact you about your workshops or find your books?
They can go to www.ahaprocess.com and get our books there. We have some of our books on Amazon. We're not selling emotional poverty on Amazon because Amazon takes 55%, okay? You can go to www.ahaprocess.com, AHAPROCESS.com, and that's how you can find out about our workshops as well.
Okay. Now, is there anything else you would like to share?
Well, I would like to share that I would hope we would, in the next decade, get better policy, state and federal policy, around children and their education. I'd like to see education focus on safe practices that are brain supportive, that are emotionally supportive, that are not this bullying culture we have right now about you better pass this test or you're going to be held back from your friends, da-da-da-da-da-da. I mean, I
right.
think that we want to hold people accountable, but there's ways to hold them accountable without bullying, and that we have a much more humane approach to educating, I think would be how I'd like to say it. I'd love to have a much more humane approach to being educated than we have right now.
That is great. I want to thank you so much, Dr. Payne, for taking our time to interview with me, because I know you're very busy, and I'm so, like, I admire you so much, your work and what you do for the schools and students, and I'm learning a lot from you. Actually, I was reading your book and studying, doing YouTube videos, everything, but I really appreciate that, and I want to stay in touch with you, especially when you come to Waco. I want to definitely, or other places, I want to know about it because I want to attend some of your conferences.
Okay. And I have a consultant in Waco, and she's going to be doing, her name is Kim Ellis, and she's going to be doing the emotional poverty workshop also. So I want to,
okay.
when we're done with this phone call, if you text me your cell phone number and your email, and then I need your physical address to send you a book. Emotional
right.
poverty book.
Okay.
Then I will, I want to put you in touch with this other woman named Linda Locke.
Okay.
The
that'll be great.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to send it right now. Let me know if you, I just text you.
Okay. All righty. Well, this is fun for me, and thank you so much. And,
Thank you
for all you do for everybody. I mean, it's just going to take all of us a lot of different ways.
Yes, ma'am. So I thank you so much, and I will stay in touch with you, okay?
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks. Take care. All right, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, my goodness. That was Dr. Ruby Payne, I'm telling you. So here's the deal. Education is my passion. I'm going to be very honest. I love working with students. I'm a very much people person. Connecting with individuals, training, conferences, that's just my passion. And so I had the opportunity to hear Dr. Ruby Payne when I was at Waco ISD. And she came and spoke to, like, all of the teachers, administrators, and her passion for education and her passion for students was just phenomenal. So I went and purchased her books, like some of her books, and I've read them and things like that, but it's like, oh, my gosh, and she gave me another perspective, because when we talk about the emotional and cognitive aspect of students, it's very important that we understand that when we're making their IEPs, their 504s, when we're also creating that positive behavior intervention plan, the school-wide intervention plan. I don't like to call it discipline plan, but the school-wide intervention plan. And so she's phenomenal. And so any training that she has, then, you know, I try to attend. And now she said that she has someone here in Waco, which is great, because I want to definitely attend that emotional poverty training. So that was Dr. Ruby Payne. Be sure to check out her website, The Aha Process. It's like a light bulb comes on. And, I mean, she's phenomenal. I took many notes, but she's great. All right, so that was Dr. Ruby Payne. She has a new book out, Emotional Poverty. Be sure to go and get it. This is recorded, so that means that you can listen again to the information, all right? Now, be sure to continue to uplift your family and your friends by asking them, telling them to log on to blogtalkradio.com/freedolove. That's blogtalkradio.com/FREDALOVE, okay? Gospel artists, writers, promoters,
actors, actress, educators, anyone with a positive, 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 positive message, please be sure to connect with Alfreda Love. That's EMONYA underscore love at yahoo.com. LinkedIn, Alfreda Love. What else? You can Facebook, Alfreda Love, because we have momentum. We're going to get the word out, because I was looking for individuals. I was praying for individuals who have this passion for education and who want to make sure that our students' voices are heard on what they need in order to be successful. So we're trying to get a group together so that we can come up with some plans, and I'm going to be doing YouTube videos and speaking so that we can get that for our students. But connect with me, EMONYA underscore love at yahoo.com. I'm all over social media. Just type in my name, you'll find me. In addition to that, be sure to continue to pray for those you know and those you do not know. And then pray for yourself. Everyone needs prayer, so pray for yourself as well. And also be sure to thank God for everything he's done. Know that God will take care of you. All right? Know that. And let's see what else. Oh, I have a couple of things coming up as far as working with students. We're going to have a reading again. We're going to have I'm writing plays. Dr. Payne has inspired me to write a couple of educational books, but my book is going to be about, my study is about overrepresentation in special education, the implications of what that means, and I'm going to actually do a qualitative research with quantitative, because the numbers that come from the different districts' data, I'm going to crunch those numbers. Okay? So I want you to listen to this recording. If you know any teachers, administrators, because she gave some really great insight. I mean, perfect, excellent. All right, and I'm just still I'm still so excited and happy. It's like, wow, she's like the guru of education. Seriously, she's phenomenal. But these are the type of individuals who you would hear on this radio station, individuals who are all across the world, who are community members like you and I, who are nationally known. You'll hear from NFL players. You'll hear from just a plethora of individuals. This is an educational, spiritual radio show, okay? So you won't hear anything about, you know, what happened in the news as far as, you know, people's mishaps. You won't hear any of that. But you will hear some information that you can take back to your school, your community, your church, and make an impact on other people, okay? On tomorrow, we have this lady. I love her, Dr. Alfreda Love. Dr. Alfreda Love is going to come on the show. You only hear her on blogtalkradio.com/FredaLove. She's coming on the show, and she's going to talk about special education and the implications of overrepresentation. That is my plight. And so, okay, so we were disconnected. Okay, so as I was saying, I want to make sure that we all connect. Dr. Alfreda Love is coming on tomorrow to talk about special education and the overrepresentation. I'm so happy that Dr. Ruby Payne have other individuals who also want to enhance the learning for our students. And so we're looking for individuals such as that. But I really appreciate each and every one of you for tuning in. Be sure to come back on tomorrow as we have Dr. Alfreda Love, and I'll probably have some needs and wants, the little workshop that we usually have.
And just know that God is good, and he's good all the time. And whatever God wants you to do in your life, no one can stop what God wants you to do. There's no one. And so just keep going, keep pressing towards the mark of the highest calling, and keep serving and keep helping individuals, and God will take care of you. I appreciate, once again, each and every one of you for tuning in. If someone asks you what that big, beautiful smile is all about, you tell them that love lifted you up because God is love. Until next time, which is tomorrow with Dr. Love, take care of yourselves and each other. Goodbye, everybody.